It's time for Twig. This week in Google, Jeff Jarvis is here. He's visiting from Berlin. Matthew Ingram's on the line from Toronto. We're going to talk about the new YouTube Red, why they did it and how it works. We'll also give you a look at Twitter and the first Twitter TV ads, plus some really good unskippable ads. And we'll visit the latest with Leitzung Schutzrecht. Did I say that right? It's all next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 324, recorded Wednesday, October 28th, 2015. You're not dead, I'm just thinking. This Week in Google is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. To see what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free, go to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world. Using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Right now, get free FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/twig. And by PagerDuty. PagerDuty decreases alerting noise for IT operations and developers to ensure that the right engineers are notified at the right time. Increase your uptime and sign up for a 14-day free trial at pagerduty.com/twit. It's time for Twig! This Week in Google. The show where we don't just cover Google. Don't let that name fool you. We cover whatever the heck we want to. Because when you have Professor Jeff Jarvis, the star of the journalism school at the City University of New York, if Jeff wants to talk about anything... Hey, Jeff, from Berlin.
Guten Abend.
Guten Abend. Is it late at night there?
It is 9:45.
Oh. So it's your bedtime, but not that.
It's bedtime.
And that's Matthew Ingram from Ottawa. He writes for Fortune.com. Toronto, whatever.
Same thing.
North of the 49th parallel. I don't know what the hell it is. It's all the same up there. No, of course, I know the difference. Toronto. I don't know why I thought you were in Ottawa for some reason.
Because everyone's focused on Ottawa.
Okay, that's where your lake is. And that's where the new prime minister will be soon.
Mm-hmm.
Is he already seated? Is there a lag between election and...
There's a whole ceremony with, like, virgins and stuff.
The coronation.
So I don't think that's actually taking place. But
Stone of Scone.
Yeah, he's marching
beavers down the street.
Big reaction seems to be how good looking he is. Everyone's like, wow.
Wow, he's
hot.
Well, they've been staring at Stephen Harper for 10 years. No one.
Yeah, exactly.
Who looks just like me, I might add.
Well, the funny thing was, his father wasn't actually that good looking, but his wife was so beautiful that it kind of brought him up, right?
Pierre was dashing. He may not have been good looking, but he was dashing.
Right.
He had a lot of charisma.
So you're about my age, Matthew. So you were an adult when Pierre Trudeau was the prime minister, right?
Yeah, I was a sort of
young adult. Yeah.
An adult. Yeah. I definitely remember it.
And he must have been exciting at that time. I mean, he was a very jazzy prime minister.
Yeah, the only thing was I lived out west at the time, and so the West hated.
Oh, yeah.
With a deep and abiding.
Well, I didn't know you lived west.
Fury.
Oh, Vancouver, yeah. You mean west.
No, Alberta.
You never lived in cow country.
Yeah.
You lived in Alberta? Alberta,
yeah. Edmonton.
Wow.
And Winnipeg, although no one really cares about that. But the oil was a big deal and sort of...
And that's why Harper was prime minister for 10 years, right?
Yeah.
The asserted power of the West, although all the population is... on the East Coast, and they've just reasserted their power.
Well, and if you look at a map of who voted for the Liberals, it's Atlantic Canada, Quebec, Ontario, and BC. And in between, it's just this vast area that did not. So
you know what, Matthew? I loved looking at the colored map. because by size, it looks like one tiny bit of the Northwest Territories is bigger than all of Canada in voting power, because it's just this huge red.
But nobody lives there. So, exactly. Jeff, what are you doing in Berlin? I know this is part of your you're on some amazing global tour. This international goodwill tour. And apparently the Germans have decided to cut him off. He must have been in East
Before
Berlin.
He even got started.
No.
They realized it's about Google, so they shut the show down.
Shut it down. It's a show about Google.
No more Google.
Shut it down. There he goes. You were about to explain us something, Jeff.
I'm at the European Broadcasters Union News Exchange. Okay. Did it do it again?
No, I'm frozen now.
They just trade news with each other, or what's that all about?
What is it? It sounds like maybe a news service, like a cooperative news service kind of thing.
No, it's all the state broadcasters get together and talk about how important they are.
Ah, nice. Should be fun.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. And then from there, you go where?
Lagos, Johannesburg.
Why?
Lagos for a bank, Johannesburg for African business media, nice. Miami for a Latin thing, then back.
Do you try to like tie all this stuff together so that it's all one big trip, or just this was just bad luck?
No, it just happens that way.
Yeah. Everybody wants to hear from
you. I want to keep my United Global Services status next year. So
I went to YouTube this morning just to see what I could see, and look, lo and behold, because I subscribe to Google All Access. Used to be called All Access, now it's just Google Music. I've got YouTube
red,
and it's true. If I just play anything, it's kind of hard to believe the videos just start. There's no pre-roll. There's no banners. It's the strangest. It's the strangest experience I've ever had of YouTube. You just don't expect this anymore. It's so weird.
I wonder how long you have to watch one of those videos to get a share.
Oh, that's an interesting thing, because I'm just playing 1 second of each. So this is the $10 a month service. Can't imagine any. I don't know. Maybe a chat room. You let me know. Is there anybody in the chat room paying $10 a month to get ad free YouTube? I think not. But when you and you so YouTube's really sold this all wrong, because that's what they sold. But really, what they should say is, if you pay for Google Music, you will also get ad free YouTube.
Right.
That is great. That.
When they first announced it, I thought, well, why would anybody pay $9.99 just to get rid of ads on some stuff? And someone said, yeah, but you get Google Play Music for free. It's like, okay, that actually makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, those two, that's a pretty good deal.
Now, we were a little worried because ad-free kind of, to me, implied maybe none of our ads either. But
they don't mind your ads.
They
right?
don't apparently Data care. Minutes. No, it's pre-roll. It's this Google supplied ads.
Pre-roll
and the banners and all of that stuff. So I'm thrilled. I mean, this is a great experience. Now, notice I'm seeing promotional stuff, like Order Lindsay's new book is up there still, and those links.
So you're actually going to get another music service as well. You know that too, right?
No.
So soon there's going to be something called YouTube Music. So you'll get that for free as well.
Well,
and so I tried to figure this out when I was writing about it. So that you get Google Play Music, and you get YouTube with no ads, and then you'll get something called YouTube Music.
Oh. Because now when I subscribe to Google
without video,
without ads, yeah,
no, without video, it really wouldn't be YouTube, would it? Now somebody's saying
it's basically if you use YouTube as a way to listen to music, then this will be that, except without ads.
Nice. I think I did get something when I got Google Play Music that was ad-free video, like maybe it was Vivo's or something, ad-free music.
Yeah, it could be Vivo.
Yeah, and then you could do a playlist. Yeah, I know.
Keep forgetting Vivo exists.
What is Vivo? And then you also can download, which is, I don't know. Let me actually look at this because I haven't.
You can download for offline, and you can also, you can play in the background.
Yeah.
So you can keep it playing while you're.
Couldn't I always do that? Is that.
Don't think so.
Oh.
At least they said that was.
Yeah, no, they mentioned
this. You could play in the background. You could definitely do that, but I'm not sure about offline. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, no, but they did sell this as background play, but I'm not. And somebody said in the chat room, "Oh, I'm loving the background play." I don't really know.
I had the background play for the last year.
Feels like that's something that's always done. Yeah. So I don't. It's so confusing.
Or maybe not full year, but definitely had it
because they promoted that as one of the things you could do.
I know. Now the download, I'm still not sure how to download here.
I'm not sure if you're going to be able to do offline on the website itself or if that's going to be too mobile when you have access to the YouTube music. Not quite sure.
Your stats for nerds. I never saw this one before. Oh. I can get stats over Adele's music. So copy video URL, copy video URL current time, copy embed code report. Nope, that's not the download there. I don't see anything here, maybe in settings.
Why don't you try searching Google?
How do you do that? How does that work? Yeah. Yeah. What would I search for? How to download music from YouTube?
Yeah.
No, that's going to give me all the things like TubeSock, all the third
maybe
party.
Maybe it's mobile only.
Oh, maybe it's on the mobile.
That's what I'm wondering. Maybe it's mobile only. You'll also, on the mobile app, from what I understand, have the ability to choose to only stream audio and leave the video behind if you want to save your bandwidth.
Like that.
Yeah.
Do like that.
Good idea.
That's what you were saying, Jeff, but I didn't cotton
that's
to
good
it.
Idea.
So,
incidentally, maybe we're going to get into this, but the things like downloading, like offline, is part of the reason why, as far as I understand it, ESPN's videos have all disappeared and all its channels have gone dark.
That's a rights issue with
right.
the content.
Because in some cases, they don't have the right to a specific game or event for
they
offline
can
or download.
But not download. That would
right,
make
exactly.
sense. Okay. And yeah, they haven't. They don't seem to have in any way deprecated or hidden our stuff. So I'm very relieved. This is good. Very happy about this.
Yeah, we can't get it.
Not it's U.S. only.
No, of course. Yeah, for now.
Don't
yeah.
blame. I wouldn't blame YouTube on that. That's a rights issue, of course. And a lot of people were already doing a roll your own YouTube Red just by running an ad blocker on YouTube. But, you know, I would guess that YouTube will figure out a way to get around those ad blockers at some point. So,
it's interesting how the there was a huge, well, not huge, but there was an outcry about, you know, Google basically forcing content producers and publishers to sign up with YouTube Red, basically. And,
right.
you know, I had a bunch of back and forth with them about, because there were a couple of blog posts about, hey, why is Google forcing us to do this? I mean, from Google's point of view, they're trying this model because they're hoping it will generate more revenue for them and for people whose content is on there.
Yeah, and it's also a response to ad blockers. And I think it's also a step toward YouTube being a destination for more premium content, right? Isn't this what
Definitely,
they've
yeah.
always Definitely. Wanted to do?
Yeah, their own shows, their own content, and more premium stuff, right. not just 3-minute clips of
right
people catching on fire.
And so if you're going to watch, you know, Meet the Press on YouTube or whatever it is, having those silly pre-rolls and right. And pop-ups and all that stuff, that wouldn't really help the experience.
And let's face it, that stuff is garbage anyway. I mean, no human being, I think, watches, you know, 99% of those pre-rolls. Like everyone,
we
I'm
all skip.
Assuming,
yeah.
clicks skip ad as soon as they can.
I've been told, and I don't know if it's true or just a rationalization, that, and maybe Jeff, you know, advertisers actually like that kind of a signal.
Why?
Remember when Digg had people voting up or down on the ads, and they said advertisers like that. They don't want to show you an ad that you don't like. So
yeah.
they kind of would like the information about people skipping. And then, of course, the challenge is for them to make ads, which I don't think is a bad challenge, that are right. unskippable.
But if, I think, you know, we've talked about this a bit on the show. I think that what we're seeing is the beginning of new ad standards, where Google and AMP has set up minimum standards for irritability. The Interactive Advertising Bureau has done the same.
Yeah.
But we have to go way beyond that and push to a level of quality, and we're not there with advertising.
Have you seen the Geico ad that you can't skip?
Yeah, no.
This is actually funny. They say you can't skip this ad because it's already over. Watch this.
Me. Think the savings.
You can't skip this Geico ad because it's already over. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The family's frozen, but then the St. Bernard comes in and starts eating Dad's spaghetti. And the spaghetti's moving. It's apparently just the actors that are frozen. Oh, my God. The dog's eating the girl's meatball. She's having a hard time staying.
She's moving, yeah.
She can't. It's like, well, there's a giant dog eating my food. Is spaghetti bad for St. Bernard's? He's skipping the salad, going right over to the... Oh, my God. He's making...
Oh, man.
This is what I'm saying. If you have skippable ads, it just incents advertisers to make better ads that you don't want to skip. And this is hysterical.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about one. There was an ad where it said, don't you hate not being able to skip things? So it was a guy watching an ad, and he kept pushing the skip ad button, and it didn't work. And then the message was, you know, when you don't have control over something, it's frustrating. That was a good ad.
So funny. And one of the comments on here, one of the first comments is from Todd Nasco, who says, I'm the dad in that ad. It was so much fun to work on, and the kids did an amazing job. It was difficult to keep a straight face and not laugh with the dog named Bolt face eating all the food. The only thing we were allowed to move while frozen were our eyes. Geico's ad team is very, very,
they
very
are good. They are.
The unskippable ad. We need more of those. Wait a minute. Here's another one. You want to see another one?
So,
yeah.
What do you say? I say savings.
You can't skip this Geico ad because it's already over. Geico. 15 minutes could save.
By the way, another incentive to make short ads, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, hold the door. Thank you so much.
they're in an elevator.
That's pretty good.
Shaking hands. They've frozen completely. And she's puzzled.
Oh, I love this. It's great.
Okay, I'll just do it myself then.
How many takes do they have to
control? Oh, it must be so fun. I love these.
Somebody sneezed.
Here's another one. Okay, I'm sorry. Geico. Now, by the way, that's the other thing that'll happen is your ad will go viral, right? Isn't this what you want?
No, this is what happens. You do it the first time, and then you realize you want to watch all of them, so they get maximum bang for their buck, right? No. Right.
Cleaning crew.
Savings!
You can't skip this Geico.
Cleaning crew's frozen.
It's already over. Geico. 15 minutes.
Guy's pointing his duster at the guy with the vacuum. The vacuum escapes. now I'm running amok. It's hit the wire, short circuited. The lights are going out. You can't. Oh, it's going again. Oh, now it's going. It's wrapping itself around the guy's feet. I have a feeling this isn't going to end well. The smoke alarms are going off. They just began that one. That one. This must have been an early edition. You know what? There's a ton of them.
I didn't know this. It's a whole genre. Yeah,
I haven't seen those. Those are great.
Now, this is the funny part. Here's an article about it in Ad Week. Viewership rates for YouTube pre-roll ads are generally poor. Part of the problem is very few marketers specifically tailor ads to pre-roll. They just take their TV spots, put them there, and of course, 5 seconds, and it's over. I'm not going to watch the rest of it. Geico understands this. They're rolling. It doesn't have results. The ads run 15, 30s, and even longer spots. But the point is that it's the 5 seconds is the ad, and then what happens after the 5 seconds.
There's no message whatsoever.
But Geico's always done that. You know, the message, but the Geico ads, 90% of the ad is humor, and then there's a little payoff at the end, which I think is brilliant. I know it's Geico. It's sunk in, right? I know they sell insurance. It works.
Have you ever bought Geico?
High five? I should play the high five one? All right, you ready? Here's. I'm getting requests now. That's good this campaign
exactly.
is.
They're getting
so Jammer B requests. Says I should play this one. This is the high five unskippable ad. Let me go back.
Savings.
So two guys, they jump, they say high five, and now they're in the midair, frozen. 15 minutes. And then you see the strings. And they're hanging on the strings. The guy's got a barbecue. He drops the hot dog from his tongs. And now the barbecue's bursting into flame. And now the steak. Oh, his shoe's burning. Oh, my God, the humanity. The poor guy, he's just sitting there. I think this is, it's, you know what? Great ads are great. Great. And I don't mind giving a plug to Geico. They deserve some kudos for that. And the agency especially. Hey, here's good news from Google Play Music. We got the news yesterday, but actually we've known about it for some time. We've been under NDA. Not me. They wouldn't tell me because I leak like a sieve.
Because your wife knows.
But my wife, Lisa says, don't tell Leo. Tell me. I can keep a secret. Podcasts are coming to Google Play Music. And in fact, we were one of the first they signed up. We're right there on the announcement along with the Nerdist and How Stuff Works and Startup from Gimlet Media. And they say this is not going to happen right away. They're reaching out right now to podcasters to submit their feeds. But eventually, this is under the guy who does Songza. Songza was a great acquisition, I think, for Google Play Music. It's when you first launch your Google Play Music, it says, you know, it's a Thursday afternoon. What do you want to do? It gives you different playlists for different moods. I love that. I loved Songza, and I was really thrilled when they added it to Google Play Music. Apparently, that's what they're going to do with podcasts as well. You're in a bad mood, want to be cheered up? Here's a playlist of podcasts that'll make you feel good.
That was Azza Raskin, Songza.
Yeah.
Jeff Raskin's
son. Yeah. Oh, it's Jeff Raskin's son.
Yeah.
I didn't Smart know guy. That. Oh, yeah. He had an operating system that was very interesting. Oh, yeah. I didn't know that that's who Songza was. Jeff Raskin, really cool. People may not remember the name, but they ought to. He was the guy who thought up the Macintosh.
Old people remember.
Yeah, and was fired by Steve Jobs because Steve wanted it. But he always wanted it. Raskin's plan, and I remember interviewing him many times. I thought he was just a wonderful guy. I really loved him. He's passed away since. But his idea was to make a computer for the rest of us. What a thought. What an idea.
He was a genius.
He really was. So as podcasters, we're thrilled because there has never before been a Google-supplied podcast client on Android.
No, hold on. No, there was. It was Google whatchamacallit.
Listen.
Google whatchamacallit. It was Listen. Right. I forgot about Listen.
Although Listen wasn't really a directory necessarily. It was more...
You subscribed.
Yeah.
No, you would subscribe. I don't know if they had how much discovery they had.
Yeah. I can't remember it being much about discovery.
Well, a little bit. Yeah. It upset me because even more than Reader, because I've pretty much stopped using RSS, but I was using Listen.
You know, that's so funny because every mainstream media story said Google's never had a native Android, and I bought it. Of course, Listen.
Yeah.
So this will be installed as. Now, how are they going to do this? Will this be installed on. It'll be part of Google Play Music, right? So here's the songs of buttons. It's Wednesday afternoon. Play music for. I keep getting entering beast mode. Do you get that too, or is that just for me? Entering beast
I've
mode.
I've seen that one.
That's just for you, Liam.
Keeping calm and mellow. I don't know why. I've never wanted to enter beast mode. Not once.
You should try it.
Headbanging classic rock, greatest aggro anthems, raucous punk and garage rock, heavy menacing metal, speaker busting heavy rock. This is not me. Well, by the way, you then go deeper and you get a playlist to several playlists within that. So it really goes quite deep.
You are tattooed, you know, Leo. So
I do have a tat. Google knows I have a tat.
There you go.
That's goddamn it.
So you
they
must like Slayer.
I do. I love Slayer. How about the early years of grunge? Handpicked by the members of Pearl Jam. I had to click five times to even know that Pearl Jam has made a playlist for Google Play Music.
That is burying the lead a little bit.
Yeah, but nevertheless, this is a great service. So I'm excited that we'll be part of this. It's not all Pearl Jam. In fact, I don't think there's not got much Pearl Jam in it. So this is kind of neat, but it's Pearl Jam-ish. I really like Google Music, and Google Play Music, and I think for $10 a month, you get that. You get ad-free YouTube. You get ad-free music videos on YouTube. That's the compelling story, isn't it?
It's pretty. I mean, it seems pretty big. I thought if it was just to ditch ads, no one's going to pay $9.99. But you get a whole lot with that.
Huh. Recommended for you, Thick Radio, similar to Robin Thicke.
that means it's similar to everything else that's ever been made.
Oh, wait a minute. I was thinking Alan Thicke. I thought it was Alan Thicke Radio. That's different.
That would be worse. No,
the joke is even better. Similar to Robin Thicke makes being similar to Marvin Gaye.
Right. Right.
Good point.
Well, this is even worse. Okay. Similar to the Beatles, because they don't have any Beatles. I get the Beatles Radio. Wait a minute. Hear songs by the Beatles? This is a Beatles tribute band? I don't think so.
Yeah, but you've got the actual players down there also in the station.
I know, but this is kind of, that's the real George Harrison. This is what's happens though when an artist says no, I don't want to be
solo stuff, right?
You can get their solo stuff. Yeah. And I bought, of course,
and the Monkees, I own the Beach Boys.
All the Beatles music,
Do you have all of Ringo's music?
No. No, for that, I have Google Play Music, thank God.
Wait a second. Did it just say the Monkees were like the Beatles?
Yes.
Well, they were.
I think that's illegal.
It should be. But they were, frankly, if you're brutally honest.
Ooh,
but what's Back Off Boogaloo like?
Peace and love. Peace and love.
You can't help but love Ringo Starr. He's the Stephen Wozniak of the Beatles.
Oh, yeah.
That guy has zero Fs to give, if you know what I mean.
He has zero Fs to give. He's the kind of teacher you'd like. Anyway, I like Google Play Music. I actually love Google Play Music. There are some restrictions that bother me a little bit, and it's all from the music industry, of course. The biggest one is that it's tied to your Google account, so you can't share it with your friends and family because then they can access Gmail and everything else.
Well, but they have a family plan that's coming up.
And the family plan will solve that. Thank you, Google.
$15, I think, a month. Yeah,
and I will definitely do that. And then the other one is that there are a limited number of devices. They're fairly stingy on the limited number of devices. I can't remember. It was like 5.
Can you kill a device, though, so you don't have that problem?
And this is the same problem with iTunes. They artificial limits on killing devices. Like, you can only kill a couple of devices a year. It's a big problem for me. But
not normal people.
Not normal people. But I have a new phone every few months. And, in fact, I'd run right up against that. I had 5 devices authenticated, none of which I can currently use. And I couldn't unauthenticate them because I'd already authenticated the Macs. And I was complaining about it on this show. And full disclosure, somebody contacted me from Google and said, we'll whitelist you. Because you're an unusual.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they do that for some folks.
That was nice of them. I am getting something for free from them, which is the ability to activate other devices.
If you review a lot of devices, that's not a normal use case. Yeah. It makes sense to whitelist someone who's, you know, going through multiple phones.
Yeah,
I'm not listening to more than one Google Play Music stream at a time or anything like that. It's not like I've given it to all my friends and family, because you can't, because it's your Google ID. You don't want to give that out. So those are a couple of limitations. Some people might bug, but I think all in all, they're doing a great job on this.
I actually think their recommendations are pretty good. That's one thing that I kind of look for. Like, I like the human curated stuff, but I'm mostly looking for, you know, I uploaded all 80 gigs of music I have or whatever, and I'm looking for Google to say, here's some stuff we think you might like. The recommendations are pretty good. I mean,
aside from the Beatles.
Right, yeah. Right.
But that's use Google Play Newsstand?
No, what's that?
I have tried.
Like it. I like it a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Oh, the Newsstand. No, I use that as a news app. That's like Flipboard. Yeah. You know what's interesting is I've been really trying to use Apple's news on iPhone. And it's execrable.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it looks awful. Yeah.
It's terrible.
There's, you know, I think part of it is because Apple doesn't want to spy on me. Like, they don't know anything about me. I was getting Detroit weather for a while.
So that makes it worse. You're right. Spying helps.
Please spy on me. because I want you to know what I'm interested in so you'll make reasonable recommendations.
I set up a newsstand for my mom.
Newsstand is nice, yeah.
Yeah. Newspaper.
And at first you think, well, this is really all about subscribing to magazines. Like, they're selling newspapers and magazines, and that is part of it. But it will also just recommend stories for you. And if you have a New York Times or Wall Street Journal subscription, it'll lift that 10 article mm-hmm. a month restriction and all of that. I think it's really good.
It's actually something that, I'm a big fan of Flipboard as well. I like mm-hmm. the UI. I like the design. I like what they do with, it's just a beautiful thing, especially on an iPad. But the one thing they're not particularly good at is recommendations. And, you know, they think they're trying to get better, but they're going up against Google. And
one thing I will mention, as far as discovery goes, let me see if I can get it working. Spotify has excellent discovery. They have a Discover playlist. I don't know if you're a Spotify subscriber, but every Monday they generate a new Discover playlist.
And some of those are really good.
And it's weird. It's a mix. And I have to think it comes a little bit from stuff I'm interested in. In fact, the album art is me. So that tells me it's my personal playlist. And it's old as well as new. That's some really old stuff. And then some really new stuff.
That's kind of the holy grail. Like this, and this stuff is not easy to do. I mean, this data-wise, you know, it's almost as hard or maybe even harder than something like voice recognition or handwriting recognition to get something. Because music is so, you know, the emotional value of that content is so much a part of why you like the song. It's not just that it has tubas in it or that it sounds like
that's the problem with other thing, the Music Genome Project, right? It doesn't really get deep into
it. It's very
that.
Limited.
Yeah.
So you know that it's like this other piece of music, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to like it just because it's got the same tempo or the same instruments. It's really hard to do that type of stuff.
This Discover Weekly playlist blows my mind every Monday. I listen, like Be My Baby by Bette Midler's in here. Jimmy Buffett, Margaritaville. And then I get this by Vincent Valliere, On va s'aimer encore. I don't know why, but I think it's because I have some French music in my playlist. I mean, my collection.
Well, and your name is French.
Oh, that's why.
Touché.
Romantic.
French pop music is, I'm about it. I don't know. It's just strange. But I like it. No, I'm not. And I like it. The Weepies, The World Spins Madly On, and then Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. See, this is, I know a computer's doing it, but if you feel like you're listening to a really eclectic, interesting DJ, mm-hmm. yeah. And that's what you're going for, right?
And there's, I mean, with Google Play or Apple, there's a real tension between, because they've got, you know, Apple has DJs, celebrity DJs, and so there's a bit of human, bit of algorithm, and both of them, you know, have pluses and minuses,
like right?
Pros and cons.
I actually pay for both Google Music and Spotify, and at some point I'm going to have to cut bait with one of them, but I don't know which.
I got Spotify free for 2 years from my cable company. So
that's awfully nice of Rogers.
Which is pretty cool, yeah.
Didn't know that.
Well, I pay them like $11,000 a month or something.
Yeah, free.
It's the least they could do. Really. Should be washing my car and doing my dishes.
All right, enough. I don't know how we got. Oh, because of the podcasting. Anyway, I don't know when they're going to launch that, but we're pleased to be part of it. And I think that that's a nice thing. All of them are doing that. We're on Positive. Spotify, too. And they're doing that because it's such a lousy business to be tied to the record companies for your revenue. And just look at Pandora, which whose stock is down 45%.
Yeah.
Partly that because business, Go ahead.
I wrote about them and about Deezer, which just pulled its IPO.
Oh, no, really? Oh, I'm disappointed.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the prospectus, it becomes quite obvious why they pulled their IPO, because it's a horrible business, and no one in their right mind would invest in it, because they basically, it's just basically money flowing out the door to record labels. So any money that comes in, I think 91% of their revenues are paid out as in licensing to record labels. Like, it's just so, because the structure of those deals, the structure of those deals is so onerous. In some deals, Deezer confessed in its prospectus, some deals, they have to sign a bulk licensing arrangement and agree to pay a certain amount, regardless of how many plays that music. So they can actually lose money.
That's part of the problem, is that essentially the record industry gets to decide whether these people live or die.
Exactly. And most of them are not. I mean, even Pandora, it's that's horrible. Spotify is somewhat better, but this business is just structurally designed to fail.
And I think Spotify knows that. I know Apple knows that. I know Google knows that. That's why podcasts and other content are being added to these services as fast as possible, because you can't rely on the record industry. At any time, they could just kill you.
And ad-free YouTube. I mean, seriously.
Ad-free YouTube, yep. What's a better model than YouTube? Millions of people every minute give us videos.
That's a great way to keep your music service numbers up.
Yeah.
To include that along with it.
Of course. Yep. I'm sorry to hear about Deezer. Deezer is a French company. Doesn't mean I don't like them. But I thought they were doing some really. I know.
You like French music.
I was making a joke. They were doing CD quality streaming and stuff. Some interesting things. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they've been around for a while. Not quite as long as Pandora, but
they also were one of the early ones. In an attempt probably to do the same thing as Spotify and Google, they bought Stitcher, which is a big podcast platform for us and for a lot of companies. And Stitcher was integrated into Deezer. So, it's tough out there.
They also mentioned that they had, I think, 6 million paying subscribers, they said. But in the prospectus, if you dig into the numbers, almost half of those came because they did a bundling deal with phone companies. And so you would buy a phone, and it would have Deezer on it. So technically, they got paid.
Boy, talk about being between a rock and a hard place, Matthew. Right? Between telecom and the music
industry, and record labels. Yeah, you might as well just go in the backyard and set fire to a big pile of money.
And frankly, how much do you think Rogers is paying for your 2-year free subscription?
Right.
To Spotify, probably pennies. Right? Nothing. Tough out there for a pimp. I was going to play it, but then I thought, you know, I probably shouldn't. On the other hand, Alphabet's doing just fine. Thank you very much. This is the first quarterly earnings report from the new Google. Revenues of $18.7 billion, growth of 13% year over year. For all the big reporting companies, the companies that do a lot of international business, currency was a big problem, because the dollar gets stronger as the euro gets weaker. And that means that, you know, unless they're doing some hedging, which I gather all the big companies do, they're going to be hurt a little bit by currency fluctuations.
But don't forget, they keep a lot of the money outside.
Offshore.
Right. So it's relevant. Without the currency fluctuations, their year-over-year growth was 21%, but they only report 13% because of. Yeah. So that just shows you it hurts.
Oh, yeah.
Operating income of $4.7 billion in the quarter. I don't really know how to read balance sheets, so I don't really have much to say about this. Traffic acquisition costs for the 3 months ending in 2015, in millions, 3.5.
Yeah, so where is Yahoo?
No, I'm sorry, $3.5 billion.
$1 billion in acquisition?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's your biggest cost.
Yeah, because Yahoo last week was, I think, $250 million in acquisition cost.
$3.5 billion for Alphabet, and the Alphabet is in this case Google, I think. And that's
what that tells you, though, is that they're in an arbitrage business to that extent.
What does that
they're
mean?
They're making a penny. That means that they're buying traffic to make a penny more on what they can serve on it. And it's not legit traffic to them. They have to acquire the traffic to feed the ads, but they're paying out a lot of money, but they're making a margin.
Well, and I mean, news publishers do the same thing, right? Buy traffic from Outbrain and Taboola,
which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Let's take a break, and then I want to talk to you about Jonah Peretti's BuzzFeed memo. I have a feeling you guys will have something to say about that. Both of you former newspaper men. So,
once a newspaper man, always.
That's right. It's hard to get the ink stain off.
In the veins.
Jeff Jarvis, Matthew Ingram, I'm Leo Laporte. This Week in Google continues after a word from Blue Apron. Blue Apron is for people like me who love to eat, but also love to cook, but rarely have time to do the shopping and the prep involved in cooking a great meal. Blue Apron solves that by delivering everything you need to cook an amazing meal to your door. Half an hour later, you'll have a dish that you've never made before, and you'll feel good about it. Your family will go, wow, great for date night too. For less than $10 a meal, and you get everything, all the fresh ingredients you need, including vegetables, locally produced farm fresh vegetables in season, the meats, the fish, always fresh, never frozen. No trips to the grocery store, no more sad takeout. Meal planning is done for you. You can tell them ahead of time what your dietary preferences are, approve and disapprove individual meals. If you say, you know, I'm not really into kale, you can say, no kale meals, whatever. But look at what's on the menu this week. BlueApron.com/twit. You'll see dishes like baked Sicilian-style rigatoni with lacinato kale. This is one of the things that's great. You get produce that you never knew existed. And if you like it, wow, yeah, you know where to go. And ricotta salata. Or they do some amazing Asian. There's the rigatoni. That looks good. Asian dishes like the ponzu tahini soba noodle salad with yellow beet cabbage and chard. And the thing is, this, you would never make this, really. You really wouldn't. But once you make it once, then it's easy. Then you know exactly what to do. And the next time you're at the store, you go, you know, I might do that ponzu tahini soba noodle salad I love so very much. It's like a little cooking school in a box. Refrigerated box. You arrange the deliveries to work with your schedule. You'll be cooking with amazing ingredients, some you've never used before, like watermelon, radishes, and farro, and purple potatoes. All the recipes healthful and 500 to 700 calories a portion. So if you eat out a lot, you got to stop. I keep saying this. I love to cook, but I never have time, so we end up eating out, and then I always regret it because it's rich, it's fattening, and it's probably not what you want to eat. But wouldn't you love a meal that's like a gourmet chef made it? But it was you, cod cakes and roasted potatoes with coleslaw and Dijon mayo, Mexican chicken and rice casserole. This must be the family stuff. Is this family? This looks good. Yeah, this is the family plan. They have kid-friendly ingredients and larger dishes, of course, for the whole family. Roast pork and delicata squash. Oh, with warm farro and kale salad. Oh, man. It's good for your kids, too. They can cook with you. They can learn to cook. And they'll try stuff, and it'll broaden their horizons. It's great all around. Go to blueapron.com/twit. Your first two meals are free. Oh, fresh mozzarella. blueapron.com/twit. First two meals free. It is so much fun. And even if you think, I don't love cooking, probably what you don't love is, you know, planning and shopping and figuring it out what you need to do. This does it all for you and makes it fun. BlueApron.com/twit. We thank them for their support of This Week in Google. Jonah Peretti sent, I guess he sent this out to staff earlier, but decided to publish on the BuzzFeed blog for the rest of us to see. Pardon me?
He does that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the guy who said, I don't think unions would be such a good idea for our employees. They wouldn't like that. They wouldn't. But his most recent blog post, I thought, was really opening the kimono in some ways, wasn't it, to how how BuzzFeed does its business. And, this is, and I only knew that because of, frankly, because of you, Jeff, because you've always talked about how BuzzFeed was moving away from the old model of a homepage that people go, like, go to the New York Times page and you read it like you would read a newspaper, to putting their content everywhere, Facebook and Twitter and where people are, a cross-platform global network, he calls it.
Right. Yeah, they were very early with that strategy, although others are trying to do the same thing. Vox, for example, is. But BuzzFeed was one of the first to have, I think it was over a year ago, they set up a specific unit called BuzzFeed Distributed. And that's all it did was create content that lived on other networks or platforms. No links back to the BuzzFeed site.
How do they monetize content. Something like that? They have to build the ads into the...
Well, because what they're really doing is they're selling a skill set. BuzzFeed right. says to advertisers, we can make our crap viral, we can make your crap viral too.
We understand Vice how says, content works. So
right. Vice says we can make content. Our crap cool, we can make your crap cool too.
Right.
And we and the rest of the media industry say, well, we write stories, we'll write your stories too, and fool people into thinking they're yours, which I think is wrong. Jonah's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. The problem is, I think that and I've said this before, I think media companies make a mistake thinking that that's the model. And I even think there's one thing in his letter that I don't have the data to know either way, but I do not buy people come for the cats and stay for Libya.
Yeah, no, I know that's not true.
I just don't buy that. And he tries to argue that. But instead, what he's done is made a business out of making stuff distributed for advertisers for this new world. And he understands that a home site and environment are meaningless. And that's really forward thinking. That's very Jonah. But
well, let's face
my
it,
fear for news publishers.
Yep.
Which I was going to say is my fear for publishers is that if they think that they can subsidize their news that way, I don't think that I have my doubts that BuzzFeed's news is sustainable in any way on its own.
It may be a model for BuzzFeed, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a model for every other publisher.
Exactly. But what do other publishers do? They pick up the wrong lessons.
Right, or they try and duplicate something that they don't have the skill set to do. I mean, Jonah Peretti built BuzzFeed as it started as a lab to understand how content works online. I mean, the guy is like Albert Einstein of how content goes viral and gets shared online.
Grant that they know how to do viral. They know how to make a story that has a fairly good shot at going viral.
Five billion
Wow.
A month.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a good skill to have. But I was trying to figure out what is it that bothers me about BuzzFeed. And by the way, then they have money to go out and hire somebody like Matt Honan to break news. And it always surprises me, but Matt's doing a great job. And I see it's on BuzzFeed. Matt Honan's got this breaking, really.
But Leo, my fear is always that when BuzzFeed goes public or gets bought by private equity, they're going to look and say, this part of the business is sweet. We love it.
Right.
That news stuff, why are you bothering? It could be that Jonah owns this forever.
I don't think if they're – to me, it feels a lot like – I made this argument before. Feels a lot like what newspapers did. I mean, newspapers, 85% of the content was entertainment and garbage.
You did come for the crosswords. Okay, Matthew, but you did come for the crosswords and you stayed for the news. It was in a package.
Some people did.
That was truly subsidized. BuzzFeed is not a package. It is by its nature distributed everywhere, and you just hit one piece of it. That doesn't mean you hit the rest of BuzzFeed. And the old myth of mass media that you charge all advertisers for all readers is meaningless in this case.
But if they can use the same skills to make a piece of news content shareable and go viral, then that helps the news, right? Presumably more people come into contact with it.
Not really, because there's no advertising attached. Who cares if the news goes viral?
No, but the rest of the operation pays for that. Just the same way it did.
Well, but why? Again, Matthew, what I'm trying to say is, but if I own it, if suddenly I'm Donald Trump and I get bored and I buy BuzzFeed, then I say to the news people, you don't bring anything value. I can get rid of you tomorrow, and I get rid of cost, and I don't lose anything in the benefit of what BuzzFeed is.
Well, even if he doesn't sell that, eventually somebody's going to make that calculus. Because the only value to the BuzzFeed right now to the prestige news coverage is just to their reputation, to burnish their reputation, yes. Right? It doesn't add to their virality. It certainly doesn't convince advertisers that they know how to make stuff go viral.
So but, I mean, reputation does have a market value, right? Yeah. That's why lots of newspapers publish the things they do and want to win awards and so on. It's true. Not because it generates revenue. But,
you can't say a Pulitzer gets you more, makes you more money.
No, but I had a discussion with a BuzzFeed executive in London last week where I was in the audience talking to people and I said, well, you know, we thought that in media, that environment had value, right? You want to be in Vogue, you want to be in the Globe and Mail, you want to be in these classy places. And the BuzzFeed executive who was there said, that's dead. That's gone. In a post-website world, environment, being a classy brand and environment is meaningless. And so you can't even make that argument either. Again,
but I'm not sure that
credit.
If you look at the universe of BuzzFeed,
we're having a little trouble. I have to apologize because Jeff's Skype is so latent. We're having a very hard time going back and forth. Say over when you're done. When you're done, okay?
Speaking of old fashioned.
Over.
But, I mean, if you look at the universe of BuzzFeed content, if you look at those 5 billion monthly views, news has got to be a rounding error. I mean, it's not like you're going to actually save that much money, right? If you have, a few news people here.
They got a lot of people there. Over.
Yeah, they do.
Over.
I don't know. Well, let's face it. Their approach is custom designed for the environment that we're in right now. I mean, I just finished writing a post a few hours ago, Facebook and Twitter, and how links are disappearing. Content exists where it exists. People consume it there. They either share it or they don't. No one's going to click on your damn links, especially if Facebook disappears them because it's an instant article and Twitter hides them under a menu in Twitter moments. So what do you do in an environment like that? How do you survive? I don't know.
Well, it's also kind of a limited time success, right? Because, I see a couple of problems with this. One is viral's great, but maybe it's not just me, but I feel like it's manipulative and people feel manipulated a little bit by 26 problems only anxious people will understand. And at some point, that's what happened with Upworthy, right, on the Facebook feed.
True.
At some point, people just get angry about it.
That stuff is not working as well. But the genius about BuzzFeed is that all they care about is triggering some sort of emotional response. And they apply exactly the same kind of algorithm to advertising as they do to their regular content. Does it provoke an emotional response? Hate, love, fear, just a strong emotion that makes you click on it or interact with it in some way. It doesn't necessarily matter what the emotion is. And you will do it even if you feel uncomfortable. In some cases, feeling uncomfortable is what makes you share it.
Yeah. I mean, although Facebook realized that this was a real problem for them because people were feeling dirty.
Right.
Reading the news feed. They felt manipulated.
Yeah.
And so
that stuff, they started downvoting.
There's some risk there. At best, it's a limited time strategy. Jeff, is this credible when Peretti writes, question, he makes up his own questions, then answers them, by the way, in this post, which I don't like. Question, why are we building it? Answer, to have a positive impact on people's actual lives in the world. What do you think, Jeff?
How much impact do you think it has on your life?
I don't know.
Am I dead? I got to call back.
No, you're not dead. I'm just thinking.
There's the title. Show title. You're not dead. I'm just thinking.
Looks the same.
It looks exactly the same.
I think he believes that. I think he believes that in the same way newspaper publishers believe half of the stuff they say.
I feel like BuzzFeed is extremely cynical. I feel like it's an extraordinarily cynical effort. That it really is all about how can we get as many clicks as possible. And now that you tell me how they monetize, which I didn't understand, it feels even more dirty and cynical because they're basically selling a native, the notion that they could do viral native content.
Which they can, by the way.
Yes.
And in some cases, their content,
yeah.
Like I watched a video ad that Zay Frank did called Dear Kitten or whatever. That thing was hilarious. I watched, it was an ad and I knew that. And I watched the whole thing. I've watched it several times.
We just watched four Geico ads in a row.
Yeah, exactly. So I think seeing it as a manipulative, if you understand sort of what makes people click on things and then you orchestrate your content so that that happens, is that manipulative? Newspapers have been doing that for 100 years, trying to get people to buy newspapers by, you know, coming up with goofy headlines or images or making stuff up. It's not that this is anything new.
I have a peculiarly moralistic point of view. I might be a Puritan because, for instance, I know that game designers know how to make their games insanely addictive by playing upon well-known psychological tricks, Skinner box type Skinnerian kinds of conditioning. And just because you know how to do it, whether you're Jonah Peretti with virality or game designers with Skinnerian reflexes, doesn't mean you should or it's okay if you do. It's manipulative and it's wrong. It's like Joseph Goebbels. Yeah, he knew how to do propaganda really good. That doesn't mean it's okay to do it. But is that puritanical of me? Apparently it is.
Well, a little bit. I mean, I find it hard to compare BuzzFeed and
no, I like to get Godwin's law into every show at some point.
But what's that law about? Hitler comes into the conversation.
Godwin's law.
Godwin's, yeah. So, congratulations.
Thank you.
But is it manipulative? I mean, is it any more manipulative than what newspapers are trying to do to you?
Jeff, what do you think?
Over.
Oftentimes, no.
I'm going to try him on a different computer.
We're
going to
call you back. Stand by.
Yeah, stand by, Jeff. I'll give you a call.
But just because newspapers do it, Matthew, doesn't mean it's okay.
No. And I'm not saying, if they were manipulating, I'm a lot more concerned about Facebook algorithms manipulating my feed to try and get me to vote for a specific party.
Well,
which
that's creepy, too.
Which they've admitted they do. BuzzFeed just wants to get me to read something and feel something and share something. I don't see that as being, a devious, like I don't see it as having, I'm doing it, right? I have free will.
So presumably. When you write a headline, do you write your own headlines, Matthew?
I do, yeah.
So when you write a headline, you think about the SEO, the clickability, the virality, the shareability.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You have to.
It's part of the job.
In fact, we write several headlines.
Really?
One's an SEO
you
headline.
You do A/B testing on your headlines?
Oh no, we have multiple headlines that are shown in different ways.
Interesting.
And so some are designed for SEO, some are designed for social, some are designed for the tiny proportion of old people who still go to the actual article.
What do you do for old people? You use big words? What do you do?
Big words and a lot of adverbs.
Very cerebral.
Yeah. Whereas the SEO is basically stuff all the keywords into the headline.
Yeah.
And if you can have something like click here, that's great.
See, I guess I am a little puritanical because I feel like that's wrong. That like what you should just do is do the best damn content you could, write a headline that describes it accurately, and let the chips fall where they may. But I obviously in this day and age, that's
suicide. Which is what you do want to do. Right. Which is what you do want to do. But if you want what you write, I mean, there's my personal view, and then there's sort of if you're a publisher. Obviously, if I write something, I would like lots of people to read it. That's the whole reason why I wrote the thing in the first place.
Right.
And so if I can get more people to see it, that's good up to a certain point.
Not by tricking them, though.
To a certain point. Right, up to a certain point. So then at what point do you feel like you've manipulated people? I mean, everyone has their own, did you not mention something in your headline? Right. Did you make it sound like something had happened that didn't actually happen?
That would be
could
wrong.
Happen.
You wouldn't do that.
Right, except it happens all the time.
Oh,
no, I don't.
I know, and I find that annoying. Right. To me, that's a strike against an organization when they do that. Maybe I'm keeping track more than others are. Maybe I'm not keeping track as well as I'd like. But I kind of pay attention to the source before I click a link. When I see an upworthy headline and I intentionally don't click it.
It comes back to the economic basis of the business. If you're being paid based, your company is making money based on eyeballs and page views and clicks and impressions, you have to get as many as you can. And so then it's a kind of slippery slope down which, you know, you don't want to slide.
Well, I admit, for instance, when we think of a show title, my general instinct is to just do something fun and funny that's kind of will make people want to click because it's funny. But then I also note that I'm always aware of, gee, it'd be good if that thing that we're, first of all, it should show up in the show, obviously. It shouldn't be out of nowhere. And I like it if it shows up later in the show because that might encourage somebody to keep listening
to watch longer,
until they
right?
hear the title. So that is a very kind of mild form of manipulation.
It's a little manipulative.
but probably I would be more successful if I were more willing to do more of that, you know? And I don't even
like
to market.
But it is a slippery slope. It is a slippery slope because at some point you are going to do things where a substantial proportion or even a majority of your audience is going to think, you know, that's a little...
Over the line, cross the line.
Right. But everyone has their own line, so you don't know exactly when. The problem is, once you pass it, those people are gone.
Yeah.
Right. They're probably gonna be like, I'm out. This is too dodgy or too. Yeah. And so then you can't get them back. That's the hard part.
I'm very judgmental. I'm getting old, and I feel like I don't like this new world where virality is celebrated as if it's a virtue.
I know what you mean, and I certainly don't like the fact that every publishing models, well, most of them, other than the kind of artisanal, you know, Ben Thompson stratechery model, every model seems to be based on getting as huge impression numbers as you can. All of those numbers are bogus to begin with. You know, they're all based on, I mean, you can juice your impressions in any number of ways that don't actually involve people looking at your content,
right?
Or even being interested in it. But I mean, you know, same thing's happening on the video side. People are, so Facebook counts a video view of someone watches it for 3 seconds. You know, is anybody actually getting anything out of that content? And yet they have a gazillion video views, and then ads are being sold on the basis of those. Oh, we've got a 1 second pre-roll, you know. It's crazy. It's a bubble.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, we'll come back in a second. Did you hear my doorbell ring earlier? I love my ring. Not only does my doorbell ring, my watch goes zzz when somebody's at my door. That's because I have this, the Ring video doorbell. It's the best thing ever. They just got a $28 million investment from Richard Branson of Virgin. And the story is hysterical. Branson was on his private island, Necker Island, in the British Virgin Islands. And he invites people down there. They have conferences. And somebody was down there. And all of a sudden, he saw the guy take out his smartphone and start talking to somebody. He said, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm answering my door." He said, "Well, you're answering. You live in England." "Yeah, I have the Ring video doorbell. I'm answering my door in England." And Branson says, "Well, what? Show me all of this." Invested $28 million. You know why? Because this is one of those ideas you go, yes, brilliant. So here's the thing. You can take, if you have a wired doorbell, which I do, if you unscrew it, it's an easy thing. There's 2 screws holding it in. You get 2 wires coming out of your door jamb there. In fact, here we go. This is all you need to now to set up your Ring video doorbell. You put the mounting plate on there. You connect up those 2 wires. You put the Ring video doorbell on top of it. You pair the Ring video doorbell with your Wi-Fi. That's a quick and easy process. Now, suddenly, you have a doorbell that still rings your chime in your house, ding dong, or la cucaracha, or whatever it is your chime does in your house. But it also has a wide-angle fisheye camera on it, so you see people at your door in HD video. It has a speaker and a microphone on it, too, so you can talk to them. Whoa, now things are changing, because suddenly you can answer the door anywhere in the world. You could say, "Hey, I'm in the bathtub," which is great. If it's a burglar, by the way, ringing your doorbell to see if you're home, suddenly you're home, even if you're not. If it's the UPS guy, you can say, just leave the package there. I'll be right there. It is awesome. It also has a motion detector built in. So it doesn't, it's not just people ringing your doorbell. It's those kids coming on Halloween. You could scare them through the speaker. It's so much fun. Ring.com/twit for free FedEx shipping. That in the United States, that means you could get it by Halloween and have a lot of fun from it. I tell you, this thing, it's like caller ID for your house. It's security. It's convenience. It is the best thing ever, and it's very affordable. $200 plus free shipping when you go to ring.com/twig, T-W-I-G. By the way, works on your smartphone. The Ring app on iOS or Android is awesome because I can take it out and see when people arrived at my door, when my daughter got home in the middle of the night, all of that stuff. Ring. Abby, I have the video right here. Look at that. Date stamped. Ring.com/twig. You're going to love it. Give it a try today. Google has a new algorithm, the Rank Brain.
Mm-hmm.
Is that's replacing, well, they haven't replaced the algorithm in a little bit, right? A year or so. We don't know a lot about it, but fortunately, there's always Danny Sullivan, and he's done a FAQ. Here's what we know about Rank Brain. It's using a machine learning artificial intelligence system to help sort through search results. Bloomberg broke this story. So this is a little different than what PageRank, than what PageRank's been doing, right? This is machine learning. It's getting better, presumably, over time. This doesn't replace PageRank, but it does work within PageRank.
So yeah, it says it's designed to focus on the types of queries that don't fit because they either unique or it's hard to relate them to previous queries. So it works on those ones.
It's Google's goal always to get better search results in the sense that give you something closer to what you were looking for when you typed that query into that window. The Hummingbird algorithm is the algorithm that Google's been using since the middle of 2013, but this will be added to Hummingbird as a part of it. There's other parts. There's Panda, Penguin, Payday to fight spam. Pigeon improves local results. Top Heavy designed to promote demote ad-heavy pages. Mobile Friendly. Man, that's such a boring name. What do you think it does? Rewards mobile friendly pages. And Pirate, designed to fight copyright infringement. So, thank you, Danny Sullivan, for explaining all of this. This is just crazy. Google, he says, has spoken of having more than 200 major ranking signals that are evaluated and in turn might have up to 10,000 variations or sub-signals. In other words, there's a lot going on, or at least it's in Google's interest to make you think there's a lot going on. What are the first and second most important signals? Danny says Google won't tell us, even though we asked twice. It's annoying.
You said please.
Please. With pretty please with sugar on the top. It's annoying, Danny writes, and arguably a bit misleading that Google won't explain the top two. The Bloomberg article was no accident. Google wants some PR about what it considers to be its machine learning breakthrough, but to really assess that breakthrough would be helpful to know the other most important factors that Google uses now.
Yeah, but Google hates talking about those.
It's because like the secret recipe.
Right, and every time it says, can't talk about that because then people will figure out how to game it.
Right. I don't blame them.
Yeah, there's enough gaming that goes on already.
Having been forced to use Bing for a while because I got a new Microsoft Surface Book, I really appreciate what Google does. Bing's not bad. It's just not as good.
Just not great.
Yeah. And Google, there's some, and this is from day one, the first time I used Google was more than 10 years ago, 15 years ago almost. It was immediately and apparently better. Just like you'd been using Alta Vista.
It was actually orders of magnitude better. Like it wasn't just a little bit better.
And it was clear. And I think maybe it's not so much of a gulf nowadays, but there's something ineffable about Google search results. They're just better. Plus,
they want to keep it ineffable.
Yes. It's ineffable forever.
No effing.
No effing effable. Are you ready?
Maybe.
Go ahead.
Maybe Jeff could talk to the German publishers. He probably is while he's there.
I think he's probably doing that.
They're still fighting with Google about whether Google should have to pay to display news articles.
Right. So what are we doing? Are we, is Jeff kaput, as they would say? Auf Wiedersehen? I'll tell you what. I'll show you Google Freitgeist. You've heard of Google Zeitgeist. Well, this is Zeitgeist for Halloween. Enter if you dare. So, what? This is not that. Oh, top costume in Fairbanks, Alaska, pirate. Top. I wonder what the top costume is around my neck of the woods. Poison Ivy from Batman.
Mm. Las Vegas is Harley Quinn.
Star Wars That's in San
my
Francisco.
Daughter's costume.
Is she? She's Harley Quinn.
It's going to be Harley Quinn. Yeah.
Wonder Woman. Well, trend. These are. Oh, in Alpena, Michigan, the number one costume is Daenerys Targaryen, the mother of dragons. And in Presque Isle, Maine, clown. They don't have a lot of... Oh, number one is Harley Quinn. Your daughter wins the prize.
There you go.
What does Harley Quinn look like?
Well, just... Do a Google image search.
I probably could just click this button, couldn't I? You have a frighteningly high chance of seeing a Harley Quinn costume at a party this year. Look at the trend.
My daughter went to one of those Comic-Con things,
yeah.
and there were like 800 Harley Quinns, I think.
You know, this is very Google, because lots of numbers and graphs, but not one picture of Harley Quinn. You just should know. My daughter always wanted to be a fairy, a various variations of a fairy, a witch fairy, a superhero fairy, but there was always a fairy in there somewhere.
Fairy's a good go-to. Fairy's.
It's a lot of comic book stuff here. Harley Quinn, Star Wars, superhero. By the way, superheroes trending down. Pirate trending down. Batman trending down. Minnie Mouse. Witch is number 7 trending down. Minions. Trending down. Joker trending up.
Well, wait a second. Here in North Platte or whatever it is, it says it's superhero. Well,
what the hell's that? Generic superhero?
It's like I'm going as comic book character.
What's superhero? That doesn't mean nothing.
Oh, Tinkerbell's hanging in there in Twin Falls.
So this is based on searches.
I see, for costumes.
For costumes. So people are typing in.
People are just superhero.
I don't know which one I want to be. Just give me a bunch of them. Superhero. Okay, pirate. So it says type to summon a costume. Harley Quinn.
In Juno, it's Chucky.
Oh, God. It's stuck in the
sort
past.
Of disturbing.
Oh, see, still no picture. all right. North Platte, Nebraska, Harley Quinn costume is... Oh, are these in real-time searches coming in?
Yeah, I wonder.
Is there something... This seems to be dropping into it. This is...
Whoa, Gulfport.
Oh, that's...
Cave Woman.
Cave Woman. Gulfport, Louisiana?
I've lost it now.
Cave Woman.
They're bouncing around. It's hard to...
Hippie in Grand Junction, Colorado. Are you sure those are Greenville. Costumes? Or are they just trying to find out? Who's Doc McStuffins?
Yeah, good question.
Disney character.
Greenville, Minnesota. Nerd.
I know that one well.
Nerd. Yeah, they don't have a lot of nerds there. What is the
nerd?
Star Wars superhero. Star Wars Batgirl. I don't know. Tinkerbell's big in Twin Falls, Idaho, apparently.
Hmm.
There's a Tulsa? Picture. I see a picture of Jeff Jarvis on the screen. Does that mean anything?
Well, I'm working on giving him a call, future. But we're having a hard time with this.
Tulsa, Oklahoma, it says owl.
Owl.
Yeah, that's didn't see that coming.
Owl. Wow. Is it woodsy owl or just general owl?
I don't know.
Owl?
It just says owl.
So apparently Google, I didn't know this, but according to Engadget, Google's doing a second hunt on Hub Router. The first was built by a Taiwanese company called TP-Link. This one's going to be built by another Taiwanese company called Asus. Very well-known company. It'll be $219.99. It's still a tall cylindrical device, but this one is more tapered. And it has something called wave control. Apparently, you can wave your hand over the top of the hub to boost the speed to a particular device. What? Okay. So you're waving the Wi-Fi over to the device. This way, over here. Give me your Wi-Fi. Come here.
So you set which device you want that command to refer to. And then you wave and it boosts the signal.
Oh, so you use the app, you select a device, and then you go.
Yes. Whoosh, whoosh,
whoosh. That's
dopey. I got to think, if they don't incorporate something like Alexa into that,
I want
someone
Alexa.
Is not doing their
I want
job.
Alexa. I decided
like if you can't
not
talk to it eventually.
I decided not to buy the on Hub because my friend. Ron Amadio, I think it was Ron, who did the speed testing on it, said it was slow.
Really?
Yeah, so I bought a Asus AC3200 router. So maybe Asus will do a better job than TP-Link. I don't know.
All right, Leo, we should have Jeff back.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Jarvis.
Hey. I'm sorry, guys.
No, this is good.
You look dead.
He's not dead. He's thinking.
I'm just thinking. Yeah. You got a show title there.
Wow. Anyway, sorry.
I still have the on-hub router because I didn't return it in time, so I'm stuck with it.
Have you set it up, or did Jake set it up?
Jake tested it and said it didn't really make any difference. It didn't make a difference in my office. It'd be harder to work because we have more than one router.
I don't want to spend $200 on a router that doesn't make a difference.
I thought the trend in routers was to have like 45 antennas and look
mine
like
has, mine
alien.
Has six. Yeah, yeah, it looks like a upside down spider that died.
Yeah. So Google just decided, screw it, we're going with no antennas.
And very few lights. The lights on my AC3200 are so bright that they're actually quite distracting. So I ended up downloading an alternative firmware that allows me to turn off the lights. So now it just looks like a dead black spider in my living room. A giant. Look at that.
Could have just put tape or something over it, but you had to download new firmware.
Firmware. I'm all about the firmware. It's all about the firmware, man. Imagine that thing. And then there's, look at this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's like 10 lights on it. They're blinking furiously, and they're bright white LEDs. So I know I had to disable those. That was crazy. But it's a very, I will say it is a very good router.
Yeah, mine only has three antennas, I feel.
Oh, yeah. No, you're not working hard. This is a tri-band router. So somebody in the chat room is giving me the link. Is this to the new on-hub? On.google.com.
But all it does is you wave it and it can change devices. It doesn't sound like it's worth yet another $20.
I'm really puzzled by the on-hub plan here. I don't get what they're up to. Why do they need another one?
Mm.
It's the same software, you know, on the phone, and it keeps getting better. Future friendly, always improving, stays secure.
Oh, it says it has multiple antennas. They're just arranged in a unique circular pattern.
Well, the other one was supposed to have multiple antennas, too.
No blinking lights, Leo, it says.
Yeah, they specifically address this.
There's dimmable lighting.
And no spider-like antennae. Huh. Hmm.
And it auto-updates, I think.
Yeah. And that's something Google, you know, pioneered with Chrome, and I think that's a good thing. Well, I don't know. I'm very happy with my spider-like antennae. But waving is so strange.
Oh, that's weird.
I think that that's completely superfluous. So what's going on with we were talking about this while you weren't here, Jeff. The German publishers and Google.
Yeah, so they're keeping the war on, where they're going to go after this copyright thing, and they're going to go into court, and I don't know that they have a very good case, actually.
They have a terrible
case. They're just trying to call it, continue the war.
Ugh.
They say, according to Google, that this is Google's Central Europe chief, Philippe Justus, said on Monday in Berlin, altogether, we pass on half a billion clicks a month to German publishers. That's a lot of results that the publishers are risking losing, right?
Well, and here's the funny thing about it. So Axel Springer, which is one of the two leaders of this, Axel Springer and Berger are the two companies. Axel Springer did join in with Facebook Instant Articles, but they're not trying to charge Facebook anything.
Yeah, it's weird.
Springer said a two-week-old experiment to restrict access by Google to some of its publications had caused web traffic to plunge for those sites, leading it to...
Yeah, that's why it seems so dumb. I mean, they already know what's going to happen if Google withdraws or like Springer said, it was something on the order of 40% of their traffic.
And Google has shown...
The publisher is going to go after them for antitrust. They're going to try to say, well, they're just too powerful.
Right. Google has shown their willingness to step away, as they did in Spain. I would worry if I were them little bit.
Jeff, can you pronounce the ancillary copyright law?
Oh, yeah, he can pronounce that.
Leistungsschutzrecht.
There's a, don't know, Matthew, there's an entire reggae song.
There's a recording of this.
Based on Jeff's pronunciation of Leistungsschutzrecht.
You can't see me live. You can hear me.
No,
that's
awesome. And now I can see it ad-free on YouTube.
You become a meme. That's when you know you've made it.
He's a meme. Well, it's not the hugest meme ever.
No. Speaking of memes.
Yes.
Speaking of memes, have you found this? So I had two of my quotes ended up on some meme maker, right?
Uh-oh.
And so now there are all these fake Twitter accounts that do nothing but throw up the meme, and they throw up my address on it, so it clutters my mentions feed. Is that happening to you?
What's the meme?
Well, it's just like the two quotes that I did. I don't know what they were. There was, here's one. One just came up. Where some see a new world disorder, others see the opportunity to bring organization. Not a very good quote, but it's some cock the meme maker, and then there's fake accounts that throw them in there. Another one is, the only sane response to change is to find the opportunity in it.
So these are kind of nonsense quotes.
No, that's not nonsense, goddammit. I said it, and I meant it. It's not nonsense. Watch yourself, LeBoy.
Worth a burn there. Nonsense.
You're all French.
So these are random snippets of...
Out of context.
Out of context snippets of Jarvisisms. And it sounds like spammers might be using this...
Not writing them, but reading them.
I've seen this before with spammers, where they just take random tweets to make them look like a real account so that the Twitter...
This is basically the same thing.
Yeah.
What
they
bots.
Do is they go to these meme makers, I presume, are the spammers. And they throw them in there, and so they'll have a fake account that quotes all kinds of crap, and it just clutters things up. And again, how much of Twitter's usage is this junk?
Well, bots are a huge part of Twitter's volume.
And the sad thing is... They can't even manage to grow that population very much.
We could do a whole show about Twitter. Holy cow.
Let's
chart of U.S. users.
So,
in the last 15 months, I think Twitter's U.S. user base has grown like a fraction of 1%.
The stock market has been punishing them this week. The shares fell 11%. And I think a lot of it is that they can't keep the torrid growth up. They had reported 320 million average monthly active monthly users. That's up a mere 4 million from the previous quarter. Revenues are not bad. Revenues $569 million. Yeah, that's up 58%.
And quite healthy growth. The problem is that they went public, and people expected certain things, like you're going to be the next Facebook or whatever. And so just showing healthy growth in revenue is not, it's not enough. It's sad, but it's not enough.
Well, you saw that Jack gave away some of his stock to employees.
Yeah, I gave away a lot. Yeah, $200 million worth.
Right. And you know, in a sense, it's a generous act. In a sense, it's kind of saying, well, what the hell?
Well, and he's still worth $1.5 billion or something. So
they ran their first TV commercial last night during the World Series. Do you want to watch it and listen to it? It goes very fast. And I don't, you know, I don't know if it's as good an ad for Twitter as, frankly, the McDonald's ads. Have you seen the McDonald's breakfast ads? I don't know if you have this in Canada.
McDonald's? Yeah, we have McDonald's.
So McDonald's, 3 or 4 weeks ago, decided to add breakfast all day long. So you can get your McMuffin in the afternoon.
Yeah, and it's done well for them, I think.
I think it's done very well. And the ad campaign for it is brilliant and, frankly, is probably the best Twitter ad. Let me show you first the Twitter ad, and then we'll compare it to the McDonald's ad, which Twitter didn't have to pay for. Maybe they did. I don't know.
Class, baby!
Actually, if you're listening, you're seeing nothing. It's just a bunch of, basically, I would say, viral videos associated with tweets around baseball World Series. And I'm sorry about
the
Blue Jays.
The heck out of everybody out there.
Yeah.
Well, and that's Farhad Manjoo tweeted, was that one of my tweets in there? It goes so fast, you can't even read them. And apparently that's the kids. The kids love that. Now, let me show you the McDonald's breakfast ad, because I think it's a much better... wait a minute. Hold on a second. This is something else. I don't know what I'm getting now. These are the all-day breakfast ads for McDonald's. If I can find them. TV ad. TV commercial. Google, you suck. All right, here we go. This is from iSpot.tv. Is this the one? I don't think this is the one I was looking for. I'm looking for the one that has all the tweets. Let me refine my Google search. I'm not real good at the Google. Just give me a second.
You should watch a show about it. It might help.
It's pretty new.
I wish there was something on this. Yeah, because they announced this on October 6th, so it's only been a few weeks. They have three ads. Yeah, here we go. But can I play them? Yeah, here we go. I think these are better ads, frankly, for Twitter than the Twitter ads.
LA, freaked, then remembered McD's all-day BeFast. Hashtag boom shakalaka laka.
At McDonald's, yes. Hashtag all-day breakfast, so good.
Yo, McDonald's serving breakfast all day now. Live goal hand emojis. Hashtag bae.
At cows go mookie, for show.
Dear at McDonald's, thank you for serving all-day breakfast. Heart emoji.
Now maybe Twitter helped pay for this.
Retweet. Favorite your retweet.
It's time for hashtag all-day breakfast. Smiley tongue face emoji.
But I'm guessing that McDonald's thought this would be good if we could get a viral...
That is pretty good.
And it's a better ad for the value of Twitter, the social aspect of Twitter, than anything Twitter... The Twitter ad was terrible for that reason.
Yeah, my fear with the Twitter ad is that it's going to be... It's just so confusing. Like, what am I supposed to be doing? And it's overwhelming.
The Twitter ad is trying to tell you that this is a new and better way to use Twitter with mentions.
Right.
It makes Twitter look even more confusing than it really is.
Yeah, it's an ad for the new feature of Twitter that nobody's really that interested in, which is Twitter's news.
It looks like chaos, basically. Like
moments.
You're just like, I am so overwhelmed.
Right.
But we're old, so maybe it's not designed for us. I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, the McDonald's breakfast, all-day breakfast, is such a success that it's actually making some of the franchisees go bankrupt.
What?
Because they have to keep the grills going for two kinds of meals, and they're pissed. It's actually costing them a lot of money. However, I think a huge success from the point of view of their customers. Yeah, and by the way, you can't say that for Twitter's moments, which I think we all agree is baffling. I mean, and that's what the ad was for. The Twitter ad was for. So,
well, and the thing I mentioned about that concerns me about moments that I put in this post I did was, it's great. So you look at the moment and you're like, oh, that's a cool image and that's a great whatever, Vine or something. But if you want to find the underlying link to the thing...
You can't.
It takes like three clicks. You have to go to the little dots, and then you have to go to view tweet, and then you have to, right? And nobody in there, no one is ever going to do that. Even I didn't want to do that, and it's my job.
My first reaction looking at it was, well, this is to solve the onboarding problem that Twitter has, which is that new people come to Twitter and have no, they're not following anybody, so there's nothing compelling at all on Twitter, and they go, well, what's the big deal? And then they tweet, and actually, nobody knows it.
And one of the interesting things about Moments is you can follow them, and then after the news event or whatever it is over, you unfollow it.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh,
which is interesting. Oh. So let's say you're following the Benghazi hearings for who knows why, and then so you follow the moment, and then you get updates from that, and then once it's over, you sort of unfollow it.
Will you get tweets?
Will you get the moment
in your tweet stream, or what will you?
Yeah. And so updates to the moment.
I don't see I remember that at the beginning, but I think they've taken that out. I don't see the follow button anymore. Where is it? I want to follow that runaway blimp, but all right, I see it. There it is. There's one. Follow. Yeah. So it has to be something that's current. Okay.
Which is actually a handy feature. And I think they're trying
to follow the GOP debate though.
They're trying to lower the barriers to entry, right? So if you're interested in X, then you find a moment about it and you follow it. You don't have to find all the underlying accounts and follow them. Right. And I could see the rationale there. And I assume they're hoping that people will get kind of sucked into it, and then they'll go through the process of actually following individual accounts.
Well, here's a puzzle. So I'm looking at today's moments on my feed. And by the way, it doesn't matter because it's the same on everybody's feed, right? It's not in any way customized. Right, I see one follow button for the World Series game. Let's go to news. Any follow buttons? No. The GOP debate's coming up. No follow button. That's probably something I would want to follow is the tweets around that. Mets Royals is the only. There's one story in all five pages that have a follow button. So what's that mean?
I thought it was on everyone.
It used to be.
Is this all humanly created? Curated?
Yes. It's all
created by Twitter staff. And so eventually, I think there are partners they're working with who are going to, like the Post, Washington Post, who are going to create their own moments. But the one thing that's missing for me is a little bit of personalization. Like if they could show me moments that, data and links.
This is the same problem I have with Apple's news.
Well, I guess following should be that level of, it's like Circa, should be that level of personalization, should be.
Yeah. You have to pay.
And maybe that's coming.
Oh, are the follow buttons paid? Somebody in the chat room said you have to pay to get a follow button.
Really?
I don't know.
Really?
Maybe
that's not a good customer service.
So maybe they only do them for partners.
So what happens to Twitter? Their stock is tanking. Growth is slowing. Jack Dorsey's come on, and that was for a while. He was the white knight, but he's got...
You know what the best thing would be?
What?
Is if someone took Twitter private.
I agree.
I think if...
Market cap now?
It's getting less. TWTTR, is that the stock?
It was 20 billion, I think.
It's
21. It's pricey for whatever
21
is.
Billion.
Yeah.
Who's and that's the problem.
The way it's going to go private is that Facebook or Google, I think, is waiting for the price to come down.
Why is it? Yeah.
Apple's got $200 billion in the bank. They got to do something. That's 10%. Yeah. That's nothing.
Mentions is better than Apple News.
Yeah. I think Apple can't use Twitter, but maybe...
Google could, I think.
Maybe Google could, yeah. We've talked about that before, and I thought maybe that's why Omid Kordestani went to... Twitter to be their executive chairman of the board.
There's a story that's not on the rundown today, but just amazed me in terms of the value of data. You saw that IBM bought the non-TV assets of weather.com.
Yeah.
What? What did they buy? Channel.
They bought all the sort of data assets of the Weather Channel.
Analytics.
They bought the Weather, but they didn't buy the Weather Channel. They bought everything but the channel.
Yeah, which nobody wants that.
But David Kenny, who's a brilliant guy. He was the CEO of Akamai. He was a major league ad executive at Publicis, and he took over the Weather Channel. And he said, "What are you doing?" who was Sports Weather, but he really made it into a data company, and so that's what IBM just bought.
Yeah,
was all the sensors and the analytics around that, which is pretty amazing. You know, so data, you know, that's data's the new content, right?
Well, and so weather content. Prediction, weather prediction and analytics is a huge, huge
$2 billion acquisition.
They got the price. Is that what they're saying?
That's what TechCrunch says. The Wall Street Journal says the weather is worth $2 billion. They bought weather.com, their digital assets. Oh, now I'm being blocked. Okay, here we go. IBM, but not the cable network.
Not the cable network. Who wants that? Yeah. Matthew said.
Nobody wants it.
You know, it's funny. It's a fire sale. NBC Universal acquired Weather in 2008 for $3.5 billion.
Yeah. If you looked at, I looked at some recent TV numbers for things like ESPN and, you know, in terms of loss of subscribers. And at the top, in double digits, was the Weather Channel. It was like 26% or something.
You know what's going to be worth? The next big hurricane, which will probably be this winter, it's going to be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
They get
weather so many other places, though.
These are some numbers, Jeff, you could use for your number of the week. The Weather Company is the fourth most visited mobile app in the U.S. 26 billion inquiries daily to its cloud-based services.
Wow.
The crap.
Four gigs of data a second are generated. 4 gigs a second. IBM will use Watson.
I'm not so sure it's a fire sale in the sense that I'll bet the channel.
Yeah.
Listen, having carriage is worth something, and they've got carriage.
Well, they didn't take the channel. That's the thing they didn't take. Oh, you're saying NBC?
No, I'm saying that you add the value of the channel plus the value of what you're sold.
Yeah, 3 billion weather forecast reference points, 40 million mobile phones, 50,000 flights per day. I don't know what that. That's something.
40 million mobile phones. Does that mean they use, does the Weather Channel use sensors?
Maybe. You know what? I have a weather app that asks me, what's the weather like right now? And then I tell it.
40 million.
It's called Sunshine. 40 million. Yeah, maybe.
I must admit, I was a little confused when I saw the news. But then the more I thought about it, the more people, we were talking about it on Twitter. It makes sense because weather is such a huge source of data. That's what IBM. So presumably they were working with the Weather Company before, you know, to license data. And now they just own it.
Licenses it back. They're going to license back this data for some long period of time. And the other thing that the story said was that IBM will. This is not a weather play. This is an Internet of Things play and a sensors play. And that IBM will move into new areas like this. Out of this acquisition,
yes.
New industries. I don't know what that means.
Big data, baby. Traffic. That's what it means. The more you know, the more you can sell.
That is a good point about Twitter, though, which I think was Jeff's point, that it has a lot of data.
Right.
One of the reasons why Google wanted Twitter to come back to the table and do a deal with it, which they did just recently, after years and years of not getting Twitter data, one of the reasons they wanted it was that real-time sort of intent. You know, people tweeting about, I'm going to do this, or I'm feeling that, or I'm looking at this. That's hugely important. Huh. Whether it's worth $20 billion, I don't know.
Here's data about 7 years of Google Chrome. Launched in September 2008 from the Google operating system blog.
Wow, has it been that long?
Yeah.
Memories.
It says Chrome's market share went from 0 to 53% in 7 years. IE's declined from 67% to 15%. Chrome is now, according to StatCounter, the dominant browser. IE and Firefox continue to lose market share.
Mm-hmm.
Any of you use Firefox?
No.
No.
Steve Gibson does, but he's a contrarian. The green line in this graph, I know it's kind of hard to see. The green line on this graph is Chrome. The blue line is IE. The orange line is Firefox. The red line is Opera. The gray line is everything else. Safari is a gray line. I'm sorry. So Safari climbing a little bit. Everybody else going down except Chrome, which is growing very steadily
I did have someone tell me that they were moving back to Firefox from Chrome because they found Chrome was crashing a lot.
I go back and forth, and a lot of people do because sometimes one uses a lot of memory and the other one doesn't, vice versa. But I'm so invested at this point in Chrome. It has all my bookmarks. It has all my extensions.
Right. Me too.
If you use Chrome OS, as Jeff does, you're really invested. I mean, all your apps are in Chrome.
Yeah. Yep.
Chrome does not
actually work. Chrome having the login.
Yeah.
It sort of came in handy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it comes in handy because everything I go to, I tell Chrome to remember the password. Of course, the downside is
you need
someone
LastPass.
Gets access to your,
yeah.
your Chrome.
You're
screwed. So when I was in Italy and my bag got stolen, yeah. the first thing I did was change my Google password, which instantly logs you out of every instance of Chrome that you have. So then no one could get access to all those passwords.
Important little tip, if you have syncing protected by a password, which I do, when you change your Google password, it does not change that syncing password. So my sync password is my old Google password still.
I didn't know there was a password on sync.
Yeah, look in your Chrome browser. Mm-hmm. A little tip there.
Why would your password protect the sync?
For that very reason.
Okay.
My friend... You don't want it to just sync randomly to anybody who installs Chrome under your account. That would be a bad thing.
True.
The Lightstone Shipwrecked.
Clicks over to settings.
And now, ladies and gentlemen.
The Lightstone Shipwrecked.
The Jeff Jarvis meme machine is in full.
You know who made it?
Yeah, some guy.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Reggae Me, Jeff Jarvis.
German reggae is not a genre that I think...
No, it's a little too perfect.
The Leistungs Schutzrecht.
All right, let's take a break. Your picks of the week, your numbers of the week, whatever else you want to do, and final words as we wrap the show up. But first, a word from our sponsor, Pager Duty. I love the tagline on the Pager Duty website, your SaaS is on the line. By SaaS, they mean software as a service. If you're running an app, a website, infrastructure of any kind, you know that there's somebody on pager duty, right? They may not be wearing a pager, but there's somebody on call, one hopes, 24/7 in case your stuff goes down. Wouldn't you like some software that not only makes sure that the on-call people get called in an appropriate fashion on time, but also that you get analytics back that help you be more reliable? That's exactly what PagerDuty does. I think it's not a stretch to say almost every business relies on software and services always that always need to be up. PagerDuty is the hub of your operations, connects all your systems into one view where you can see critical events across all your monitoring tools. Over 100 ready-to-use integrations, including Nagios, New Relic, that's what we use for our metrics on the website, Keynote, AppDynamics, and or Roll Your Own. They got a great API, too. A lot of people do that. When an incident occurs, PagerDuty notifies exactly the right team and member based upon on-call schedules and personalized alerting preferences. If alerts are missed, PagerDuty automatically escalates to another team member until it's responded to. And by the way, team members love it too because alerts are deduped and filtered, making sure that only actionable alerts are delivered. And of course, they can use whatever method they choose, not just pagers, but phone calls, SMS, email, push notifications. It's great for the people on call, and it's great for the manager who has to decrease the noise, improve reliability. PagerDuty's analytic tools will identify common problems, allowing you to proactively make system improvements and prevent future outages. So it's great in both regards. By the way, they are relentless when it comes to reliability because, of course, if your server, if your pager system goes down and your servers go down, that's a problem. PagerDuty is fully distributed across multiple data centers, multiple hosting providers, multiple contact method providers for every method. So you'll never miss an alert. You can even customize it to fit how you and your team work. Many, many, many companies use PagerDuty, including Microsoft, GitHub, Boeing. I can't think of anything that's more more mission critical than building a jet airplane. Nike, Pinterest, box. Go there right now, pagerduty.com/twit. You get a 14-day trial. For as little as $19 a month, you can increase your uptime. PagerDuty, I love them, .com/twit. There was somebody did a tour of one of the subway control centers that it's still using hardware from like 1910.
Fascinating story.
Where was that? I saw that.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
I'm trying to find it. Was it the Times? It was something like that.
I think it was the Times, yeah.
Yeah. Really cool. Now, I'll have to find it for you, Matthew, and send it along to you.
It's the same technology that runs the internet here at the Radisson Park Inn in Berlin. It's a steam-powered engine behind it, and they run out of coal.
Yeah, it feels like that. Well, we're glad you could join us, even through the magic of the...
I'm sorry to be a hassle.
No, you're not a hassle. Jeff, you're worth it. Jeff, you are worth it. Seriously. Do you want to give us a number of the week?
Sure. Well, so I've got an announcement to make.
Oh, no.
We're moving this show to Tuesday mornings. And I'm going to work for Facebook because it'll be just like what you're experiencing right now.
Oh, I know Facebook. What you're talking about.
Every Tuesday is going to give the staff opt-in 2G Tuesdays. Where right. When they check in to Facebook, they can see what the world sees Facebook like at 2G. Which, again,
too bad
is
it's
not
optional,
like
though.
The Radisson Park Inn Hotel in Berlin.
No.
Too bad it's optional. It should be required.
Yeah, 2G Tuesday.
There's one story out there that said it was required, but no, it's not.
Yeah, you can't make everybody do that.
Yeah.
But that's a great idea because I think a lot of websites and certainly apps are designed for the high-speed internet. And as soon as you get – I've been on 2G using T-Mobile in Europe, for instance – and you really realize, you know, those things are very heavy. Facebook does have a low bandwidth Facebook Lite app, apparently, that they offer in areas where
I'm trying to remember who. Someone forced their staff to use the mobile version of the site. Was that Facebook?
Facebook did, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, which is a great idea. Like, just to experience it the way someone else would on a mobile device.
It makes you happy to get back and... Get to your high speed, I got to tell you. 2G Tuesday. Do you, Matthew, have anything you'd like to recommend or suggest? Any Android goodies or Chromebooks tools or anything like that? You don't have to. It's not a requirement, just for fun.
I don't really have anything. My gear's all so old. There's nothing to talk about.
Old gear. Kind of like that Subway.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think this is a good time to wrap things up. It's late at night in Berlin. Jeff has to go to the Kit Kat Club.
And George Pataki on the TV in the early debate. Who knew they were still running?
Wow. Pataki's still around?
Yeah.
It's so funny. But Ben Carson's going to be our new president, and I couldn't be happy.
Oh, God.
Jeff Jarvis is at the City University of New York. He won't be back, though, for a few weeks. He's a traveling man.
Oh, wait. One news item, which we didn't talk about.
Oh, yes.
Alexis Ohanian is reportedly dating Serena Williams.
What?
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
In the category of matches that you didn't see. That you didn't see coming.
I did not see that coming.
Whose report is that, Matthew? Just so
Us Weekly.
Us Weekly, yeah. Exclusive.
They met at lunch. It's new.
Haven't seen. Yeah. He's learning tennis.
She was dating Drake.
Did not see that coming.
Mm-mm, now she's dating a nerd. Says an onlooker, he called her babe, and they held hands.
Not bae?
No, that would, no. Alexis, I love Alexis Ohanian. Good for you.
He's a good-looking guy, Alexis.
Yeah.
Have you ever met Alexis?
Yeah, we interviewed him on Triangulation. We had a great time.
Great guy.
Okay, like, so you've seen him physically?
Yeah, he's not exactly. Yeah. In fact, he's saying he's picking up tennis now.
But it surprised me that he's 6'5", I think. 6'5", or 6'6".
He's kind of lanky, though. It's a lanky.
Yeah, I did not expect him to be that tall.
Yeah. Well, he was sitting down when I interviewed him. So.
All the time because of the show.
You're lanky.
When,
true.
When people do recognize me, they say, oh, I didn't know you were tall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm the size of a little Lilliputian on their screen.
Even smaller right now.
I get you look a lot older. So.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen. We've had some fun, but the fun is over. It's time to get back to work. Thank you very much, Matthew Ingram from Fortune.com. Great to have you here. Yeah, always enjoy when you can come down and visit us virtually via Skype. We do This Week in Google, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time. That will be 19:30 UTC next week. What are you laughing?
Everybody, I heard the last show.
Oh, it's very confusing.
Everybody gets confused.
Well, because then I will get emails and tweets saying, what are you, crazy? UTC doesn't move. No, but we do. So we are going to be UTC minus 8 starting on Sunday. So that means all the shows next week will start kind of really at the time you expect them to start. The real problem so far is that since Europeans have fallen back.
Mm-hmm.
That they missed the first hour of the show. So
we should talk sometime about how daylight saving time is a scam.
We know we all know it's a scam, and all the evidence points to the fact
that used to say, "There's God's time and there's FDR's time."
Oh, was it FDR? No, I thought it was even more recent than that. I thought it was in the '50s that they.
No. I think it was back then. All right. Well, let's. Okay, Google. When did daylight savings time start? That's going to say last week.
It's just going to say last week. But we know that it doesn't. It doesn't.
Yeah, it is, but next one is history. All right, let's see.
Doesn't
here.
Save lives. Doesn't save energy, apparently.
No,
because it's a push because of air conditioning.
Screws up people's sleep patterns.
It was first used in Europe in 1916. In the U.S., it was first introduced in 1918 when Woodrow Wilson signed it into law during World War I, sparked by Robert Garland, a Pittsburgh industrialist who had encountered the idea in the United Kingdom.
It's a terrible idea.
A passionate campaigner for the use of DST in the U.S., he is often called the father of daylight savings. A proud man. And then FDR instituted it year-round in 1942.
So it wasn't year-round until FDR did it. All right. In other words, it's a relatively recent thing, and we could certainly get rid of it. I think we should just get rid of time zones.
Whoa, now you're talking crazy.
Yeah.
Somebody.
Go metric like Canada.
Let's go metric. So it doesn't save energy. It doesn't do anything for you. It causes more heart attacks. The Monday after daylight savings time, heart attacks go up appreciably, causes more auto wrecks. Actually, it's the auto wrecks that go up appreciably on Monday. The heart attacks start on Sunday. It's a terrible thing. Let's get rid of it. Somebody said, just want it to be the sun to be over my head at noon. That's it.
You know who came up with the idea of worldwide time zones?
Who?
Sir Sanford Fleming, a Canadian.
A Canadian.
1879.
Fleming was famous for something else, wasn't he?
I don't know. Probably.
I think donuts and coffee.
He invented the Tim's bit.
Also invented Tim Horton.
Donuts are good anytime.
On that note, I would like to say so long to you all. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google.